You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Welcome to Sunday School Dropouts, the podcast where an ex-Christian and a non-believing sort of Jew read all the way through the Bible for the first time. My name is Nico Bakulich.
And I'm Lauren O'Neill.
And let's get biblical.
Let's do it.
But before we do that, there are a couple of pieces of information that you simply must have.
Such as, I'm the ex-Christian I was raised. Presbyterian, I'm now an atheist.
And I'm the non-believing sort of Jew. Also, this is not a Christian Bible study podcast.
And it is not appropriate for chillums or youngins.
Or minions.
Minions aren't appropriate for anyone and should be wiped from the face of the planet. Normally, I read the New International Version and my lovely husband, yeah, that's right, we're married, reads the New Revised Standard Version, but today we're doing an apocryphal book, and so we read some, like, bullshit on the internet.
Mm-hmm. Which apocryphal book are we doing, my lovely wife?
We are doing the Acts of John. Do you want me to give you some fast facts of John?
Only if they are faster than the speed of love?
Question mark? So this is another apocryphal Acts book, which are basically like fanfic about the lives of Jesus' apostles. There is one such book in the canonical Bible, Acts of the Apostles, or Acts for short. But there are a bunch of apocryphal ones that didn't make it into the Bible. We've done several of them. Acts of Paul and Thecla, Acts of Thomas, Acts of Peter. And today we're looking at the Acts of John, which is about the Apostle John. So the three disciples that Jesus was closest to were Peter, James, and John.
Mm-hmm.
And James and John were brothers. They were sons of Zebedee. They were originally fishermen. And in one gospel, they're given the nickname Boanerges, or Sons of Thunder.
They definitely, that's the kind of nickname you give to yourself. Nobody has ever been like, those two are simply the Sons of Thunder. They just show up with that written on the back of their denim jackets.
We don't know who wrote this book. It was probably written in the second half of the second century, so sometime between around 150 and 200 Anno Domini.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, the church fathers decided it was heretical, so they tried to destroy all the copies. And so we have a lot of the text, but we're missing a lot of fragments.
Mm.
For example, the first 17 chapters. So we're going to start with chapter 18. You know, when I go like, hey, wouldn't it be funny if we started at chapter 1 and like it's supposed to be cute? But this time we have to start at chapter 18.
Mm-hmm.
We
can't. And that's never cute.
Yeah, it's not funny at all. And I keep saying it and I don't know why. It's hard to stop. So chapter 18. John is traveling to Ephesus. Ephesus is a city in what is now Turkey. The book of Ephesians that we did an episode on is written to the church in Ephesus. And in the one canonical Acts book, you may remember, when Paul went to Ephesus, there was a riot because the silversmiths who made silver shrines to Artemis got very upset about Paul worshiping someone other than Artemis. So just keep that locked away in your little brain locker.
Thank you.
So John's on his way there. He's got a whole crew of folks that don't do anything.
Including Demonicus,
mm-hmm.
Aristodemus.
Mm-hmm. A rich man named Cleobius.
Very rich man.
And the wife of Marcellus, but apparently not Marcellus himself. Also, there's a bunch of servants which are like briefly mentioned later. It's like, oh yeah, and then Cleobius told his like multiple servants to go do this. So it makes, when you just read it, it's, oh yeah, that's a, it's a traveling party of like five people. But no, it's actually a bunch of servants. No,
John rolls, I would say, quite deep.
Yeah, quite deep. As they're traveling, God just yells down from heaven real quick. Hey, John, you're doing great and you're going to crush it in Ephesus. And John's like, thanks, big guy.
This is a constant of these apocryphal acts. God is very, is pretty vocal.
Yes.
And the apostles are in constant conversation with him. Mm-hmm. Two-sided conversation,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the one-sided conversation that
of the prophets in the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
So, they're getting close to Ephesus. They're more or less there, and they're met by the commander in chief of Ephesus, whose name
is a praetor,
Lycomedes. And Lycomedes says that God spoke to him and said, "Hey, stop sinning. I'm going to send this guy John to cure your wife, who's been paralyzed for 7 days."
Now that's a classic biblical ailment, right?
Yes.
There.
Yes, just a mysterious week-long paralysis.
Mm-hmm.
And the wife is named Cleopatra.
It's a good name.
It actually means glory of the father, so like it's actually very Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, okay, cool. So then they go to Lycomedes' house. He's like, here's my wife Cleopatra. As you can see, she's a total babe, but
a
she's
stunna, as they might say.
She's a dime piece, but she's paralyzed and it sucks. so, you know, I've been doing everything that I'm supposed to. I'm giving all my sacrifices to Artemis, blah, blah, blah. And now I'm angry.
And John's like, let me stop you right there.
good news is, I think I found your problem. Problem is you're worshiping an idol.
Mm-hmm.
And if you worship the real God, he'll heal your wife. And I don't think that'll be a big, you know, barrier for you because you just told me that God spoke to you
mm-hmm.
and predicted my arrival. So
that's a great start.
So, yeah, like just believe that. Just, you know, hop on the train, but
go on and ride it.
But Lycomedes does not respond well. In fact, he throws himself to the ground weeping and dies.
before he dies, he is talking about how great his wife is. And I read this line and I need you help understand.
Okay. I try.
Okay. See, Lord, the withering of the beauty. See the youth. This is Lycomedes talking. See the renowned flower of my poor wife, whereat all Ephesus was wont to marvel. Wretched me, I have suffered envy. I have been humbled. The eye of mine enemies hath smitten me. I have never wronged any, though I might have injured many.
Yeah. what part don't you get?
Well, just mainly that last part.
Well, he's just saying, like, I'm a powerful guy.
Oh.
I could be out here, like, oppressing people, stealing he says people's
he's,
money.
He's,
but I didn't.
Oh, he says he might have injured many. I see.
Oh, yeah, like he had the opportunity to do so,
oh,
but
I
he
understand.
Didn't take it.
I understand. I thought he was saying...
I may have. I don't know.
I've never done any wrong to anybody. Sure, I've hurt a lot of people.
No, he's saying he has the opportunity and he didn't take it.
See, you did know. You did understand and you helped me understand.
Great.
That's how we move forward on this journey.
Yes. Called marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Called wedding podcast.
Called Bible?
Question mark?
Wedding podcast. What's that?
I don't know. It's what we're doing now. Lycomedes throws himself on the ground and dies. John flips out because he's like, oh great, like this guy's dead, everyone's gonna think I killed him.
I wouldn't say he flips out. He seems more exasperated.
Well, no, he does flip out because first of all he says like, oh, that vision that I got from God must have actually been from the devil who sent me here to get killed because people will think that I murdered this powerful guy. He starts weeping so loud that the whole city comes to investigate.
Mm-hmm.
So I would describe that as flipping out. If you are crying so loud that the whole city comes to see what's up, I think that's flipping out.
That's fair.
And
I retract my previous statement.
John is like, okay, God, I know I just immediately gave up on you and called you the devil 5 seconds ago, but please help me convert all these heathens that have now gathered around me because I'm crying so loud.
Clever gambit by John here.
Agreed.
He's in a rough spot. Everybody's coming to see what's going on, but he knows God's weakness. A whole pile
of converts.
Of potential converts.
Yeah.
He's like, God, we got to turn this crisis into an opportunity.
Into a Christ-is. So with the whole city watching, he goes over to Cleopatra, bam, cures her paralysis, brings her out of the coma or whatever. Everyone is amazed. And she's like, hey, where's my husband? And John's like, okay, so some bad news. I'll bring you to him, but you have to promise to keep believing in my God who just cured your paralysis. And she's like, okay, so he takes her to the bedroom. Let's move this to the bedroom where your husband is lying dead. Aw, yeah.
We've all heard those words.
And she sees her husband lying there dead. And she starts crying, but just silently.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of like weeping and wailing like John was doing 5 minutes ago. And for some reason, this counts as like proof that she believes in God.
I mean, I don't know how much proof you'd need if you had just been resurrected.
Well, like John sets this condition.
Right,
like,
I understand that.
And then when she just like cries silently instead of like freaking out, he's like, okay, you passed the test, you know, go over and tell your husband to arise in the name of God. And she does, and bam, he comes back to life. So now Cleopatra and Lycomedes are both healthy again. I'm sure there's so many converts from the crowd seeing these two miracles back to back.
Mm-hmm. Although the Lycomedes one seems a little weak, in my opinion, just because like John was concerned that it would look like he killed the guy.
Uh-huh.
So the fact that he's resurrected to the crowd seems to me like
an admission that he killed the guy. if I were in the crowd, I would probably think.
I would think there was something weird going on.
Fair enough. Like,
John and this guy went into the house the night before, and everybody knew that Lycomedes' wife was paralyzed.
Uh-huh.
But nobody knew that Lycomedes was dead.
Uh-huh.
Until they heard John crying and then came running.
I mean, fair. But it actually doesn't. Does it even talk about the crowd reaction? I don't think it does.
No, it doesn't.
Okay, so.
Except that there are many converts on the day.
So then Cleopatra and Lycomedes are basically like, okay, we're converted, you know, thank you so much for doing these miracles. Please stay with us in our home. And John's like, you know, yeah, I can stay for a day or two, but like I kind of already have, you know, reservations at the hotel or whatever. He's like, I had like a plan, you know.
He's staying with the local church or something.
Yeah.
Something.
And they're like, no, you have to stay with us for longer because otherwise we'll stop believing in God because we're dumb. And he's like, okay, I'll stay here. So then during John's tenure at the household of Lycomedes, Lycomedes brings in this portrait painter. And he's like, okay, see that guy over there? Secretly paint his portrait.
Yeah.
Don't tell him.
Hide all your paint shit.
Yeah.
Go memorize this guy's face. Well, in fact, even more than that, he asks him to memorize his face, but then he also installs him in a room where he can watch John.
Mm-hmm.
So I can only assume this is a Scooby-Doo style portrait with the eyes cut out that he watches through.
Did he paint the very portrait?
Of course.
Okay. Great.
Of course.
Perfect.
He painted the peeping portrait.
He painted the peeping portrait.
The mystery of the peeping portrait.
So this painter does it. He secretly paints a portrait of John, and Lycomedes hangs it up in his bedroom with garlands.
Like a little altar almost.
Yeah, because this guy brought it back from the dead, and so he's like worshiping this guy.
And then Lycomedes is spending so much time in there admiring this beautiful painting that he secretly had commissioned.
I also like, yeah, so John like confronts him about it.
Well, John asks him, like, hey, you spent a lot of time hanging out alone in your bedroom.
But I also like, he's like, every time you get out of the bath, you always like go to your bedroom alone. And he's like, are you hiding something from us? And it says like, oh, it says he uses a jesting tone or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's like literally he's like, oh, you hiding something from us? You know, like he's just joking, but he doesn't realize that Lycomedes is hiding something.
What a weird life is going on here. So
yes.
Like the praetor, one of the top citizens in this town.
I think it's pronounced praetor.
Really?
In American. Preta.
Praetor?
Praetor, yeah.
It looks like Praetor to me.
Yeah. We could say Praetor.
Thank you. See, compromise.
Compromise. I like Praetor better, even though it's wrong. Well, it's probably, I don't know. Let's move on. We don't need to get mired in the
point
pronunciation
is,
corner.
This guy is a boss. Like DJ Khaled or something along those lines. And
never took an L in his life.
From my understanding, still true to this day. But he's living this weird, like, communal Christian lifestyle with John.
Uh-huh.
Like, they hang out all day.
Yeah.
And John, like, knows what he's doing after he gets out of the bath.
Yeah.
What's that scenario like?
Well, he's staying in his house.
He's staying in his house. But I can understand him taking a little time off because he just got resurrected from the dead. But it's still weird. I'm trying to imagine what the vibe is like in that house where John is, like, keeping track of what he does when he gets out of the bath.
John does say, like, I mean, I'm leading y'all in prayer. Why do you got to go in your bedroom? You know, we're all praying out here. So I think the vibe is like pretty
religious, you'd
prayer.
Say?
Yeah, pretty religious.
It's not a party vibe then. It's more of a religious vibe.
Yeah, definitely. And so then like immediately is just kind of like, nothing. But then John goes like, just walks into his bedroom and he sees this painting, and he doesn't realize it's him because he's never seen a mirror.
See, that's an amazing old-time history detail that I think is actually really cool.
Yes! And so he, like, looks at the painting, and he's like, who's this old dude in the painting? Is this, like, one of your Roman gods or whatever?
Yeah. It's like, I thought you gave those guys up.
And, like, he's like, no, that's you. Like, you raised me from the dead. Clearly, you're worthy of worship, and I worship you. First of all, Cleopatra is the one who raised him from the dead.
That's a good point.
But
well, I mean, God is the one that raised him from the dead.
I mean, yeah. And then, like, so Lycomedes shows him a mirror for the first time in his life.
Mm-hmm.
That's so crazy to think about. Like, because he's an old man, apparently. Mm-hmm. He describes the man depicted in the painting as old. So interesting to think that, like, people used to go through life not knowing what they looked like.
Yeah.
That was, like, a common thing.
Yeah, that's... Sometimes in among these old religious documents, you'll find something that actually connects you to a different historical time and place. And that really, like, does.
I think about, like, I know exactly how my face looks from every single angle, mm-hmm. you know, and I, like, can take pictures of it at the exact right angles that I want. It's so crazy to me to think of just you go through life and you just don't know how you look.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a big deal. Anyway, John looks at the mirror and he's like, okay, yeah, like that, I see the painting does look like me, but it's just a painting. And, like, you're worshiping an inanimate object. And, like,
I'm going to turn this into a metaphor about Christianity.
Yeah.
Because you are worshiping, like, a dead version of me.
Yeah, he says, you have drawn a dead likeness of the dead.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, first of all, don't worship me.
Right.
You know.
Obviously.
But then, like, so you worshiping, like, a painting is like, the same as you worshiping me instead of God. Because compared to God, I'm just, like, some paint on a canvas. I'm not whatever. I'm dead. He goes on an extended metaphor. He's like, tell you what, Lycomedes, why don't you become a painter, except instead of painting with colors, why don't you try painting with faith in the one true God? And, like, all these other virtues, like, mm-hmm. honesty and fairness or whatever.
Fun-lovingness.
Yeah, fun-lovingness. Jesus couldn't get enough of that.
Chillness. Vibe factor.
And
stick-to-itiveness.
So, how does that resolve, actually?
I think they just toss the painting.
They just, like, don't even... he's just like, hey, so, anyway, quit it. Okay, next chapter.
Yeah.
John has this guy round up all the old women.
Well, somebody tells this part is amazing.
Okay.
And I have to find the quote exactly because it's really bizarre. Somebody comes and tells him they have gone out and found all of the old women in the town.
So this is like
over 60 years old.
Yeah, over 60. This is something we've seen in other apocryphal Acts books.
This is classic what you do when you come to town, create a new church.
Yeah, and you, like, you know, make sure the widows and orphans get financial help, mm-hmm. you know, heal the old widows, et cetera, et cetera.
Anyway, somebody comes to John and says, I've surveyed all these old widows over 60 years old, Most of them are badly infirm.
Yes, only four were healthy, physically speaking.
And here's the quote from the text, which is the strangest reaction you would ever think. When he heard that, John kept silence for a long time and rubbed his face and said, "Oh, the weakness of them that dwell in Ephesus. Oh, the state of dissolution and the weakness towards God. Oh, devil, that hast so long mocked the faithful in Ephesus," etc., etc. "Send after the old women that are sick and come be with them into the theater and through me heal them."
Yeah.
He's just like rubbing his face being like,
I mean, way to blame the victim.
That
all these people are sick.
All of these old... Ugh, this is just pathetic.
It's also weird because it just came on the heels of him being like, don't worship a human, like, don't worship dead things. That's not important. Like, what's important is heavenly stuff. And then immediately he's like, oh, well, these people are physically sick. That must mean they're, like,
see, this is
sinners.
This is the weird crossover between what would become, like, sort of an Orthodox Christianity and the, like, miracle literature stuff.
Yeah.
Because in the miracle literature version of Christianity, everybody that follows Christianity would be miraculously healed.
Exactly.
They'd be just, like, a little bit stronger and better than anyone who doesn't, because, like, that's how folktales work.
Obviously.
But in the, you know, canonical doctrine-based way, you can't actually promise that because that's not how life works.
Right. So...
unless your religion is good hygiene, in which case, yes, generally
which
speaking...
which is not endorsed in the New Testament. Mm-hmm. Jesus explicitly says, don't wash your hands before you eat.
The bad boy.
So they gather up all these old women in the theater. This is something we saw in like the Act of Peter, when Peter had to have like a magic off with a wizard.
Mm-hmm.
It's like gather everyone in a theater and
that time
and
his biggest boosters and cheerleaders were all of the widows and orphans.
Yes. Yes. And there's another praetor, which is, you know, I don't know, a high ranking official type of guy. This one's named either Andromius or Andronicus. It changes. So I'm just going to call him Andy. Andy is like, if this guy's going to heal the sick, he has to do it naked with nothing in his hands and he can't use any magic words. Mm-hmm. And that's the only way I'm going to believe that this is like sent from God and not just like a magic trick.
Right. Although if you were sent from God and you healed people with magic words.
Uh-huh.
That's fine, right?
Wouldn't you? I mean, yeah, like, just let them use magic words.
Doesn't
yeah.
that meet the requirements?
So then everyone's gathered around. John steps into the ring or the stage or whatever is in a theater in Ephesus at this time, mm-hmm. whatever that means. He does not, it doesn't say that he gets naked or anything. So he doesn't seem to be following Andy's.
Maybe he's always naked.
Andy's conditions. I think he keeps his clothes on. I think he's given him a show, but not that type of show.
But he doesn't even know how he looks, so he's supremely confident.
He's supremely confident. Well, he can see down.
And he likes what he sees, whatever
I
say.
So he's like, okay, I'm going to heal all these bitches by the power of Jesus Christ, our Savior.
I don't like gendered insults on
my
show.
First, I got to lay some preaching on you. And then he just like goes through a bunch of Christian principles, like just gives a sermon. You know, he's like, don't value earthly things, only godly things. You know, fucking.
It's horrible.
Lay not up your treasures.
It's like five paragraphs of really bad sermon.
Give money to the poor. Like blessed are the meek and the poor, and the rich and powerful are going to go to hell. Don't drink. Don't be a murderer or. Yeah. Don't be a murderer. Or a poisoner, sorcerer, robber, defrauder, sodomite, or thief. Like that poisoning was apparently a big enough thing at the time.
Don't be a killer or a poisoner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or a robber or a thief. And then it says, and having thus said, John, by the power of God, healed all the diseases. And then after that, there's apparently some sentences missing because we don't get the crowd's reaction. Mm-hmm. And
what's the end goal here? Are we trying to send these widows back to work? Is like is that the disappointing thing? Like
well,
of all of
the
widows in town,
the widow test in the Timothys.
Of all the widows in town, only four of them were showing up to work regularly. The rest of them you know, are so infirm that they can't even work a full-time job.
They need to be contributing to this economy. They need to be, like, making fucking altars to Artemis or whatever.
For export only. Because this is a Christian town now.
Not yet. The praetor, Andy, converts, apparently, because then in the next sentence, he's like already converted and he's following John. So so there must be some sentences missing. But whatever. In that next line, basically, John's traveling companions are like, okay, we've been in Ephesus a while. Let's move on to Smyrna. And John's like, I have a better idea. Why don't we move on to the Temple of Artemis right here in Ephesus?
Mm-hmm. But before he gets there, we take a brief break. You listen to some music, and we'll be right back with more Sunday School Dropouts.
We're going to be like poisoning and robbing and defrauding if you want to get into that while we're gone. And then we'll see you in a bit.
Okay. See you in a minute. Bye.
Welcome back to Sunday School Dropouts. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Nico.
And we are talking about the apocryphal Acts of John. When we left off, John had performed a couple miracles in Ephesus.
No big.
Converted a few heathens.
Yeah, who cares?
And now he's headed for the Temple of Artemis. And we know how Ephesians feel about Artemis because in the one canonical Acts of the Apostles that's in the real Bible, Paul tried to switch them over to the Jesus plan, and they rioted.
Specifically, the silversmiths, whose livelihood he was endangering.
True.
With his, frankly, heathenist content.
Because they made silver altars to Artemis. So, by the way, I had a hamster when I was young named Artemis. Just thought I would let you know.
That's good. I appreciate your full disclosure.
We had three hamsters.
Full disclosure, your hamster Artemis is a sponsor for the show.
My hamster was named Artemis. My sister's was named Peaches and Cream.
Mm-hmm.
And then also we had another hamster named
Thor. Hamster was named Peaches and Cream?
Yeah.
Okay.
And my Peaches, sister was
Peaches
like...
Peaches and Cream.
My sister was like seven when she named it. And then we also had another hamster named Thor. And Thor had giant testicles.
Makes sense.
Anyway. 2 days after this this
great
healing
story,
miracle,
by the way.
When John cured Cleopatra's coma and raised Lycomedes from the dead. 2 days afterward.
Cleopatra in a coma sounds like a 90s pop song.
It actually sounds like a Smith song.
you're right. It does sound. But that's just because if it's
Cleopatra
a boy in a coma.
Cleopatra in a coma. I know. It's serious. they're having a festival. I'm unclear about whether it's for Artemis's birthday or the temple's.
It's for the temple.
The temple's anniversary.
Mm-hmm, which is called the temple's birthday, which I think is kind of cute.
It's cute. I guess you're supposed to wear white.
Everybody knows when you go to a temple festival, a temple birthday, you wear white.
You
gotta
wear white, but John wears black because he's like, I'm...
an edgelord.
He's like, I'm goth mom. This is who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Deal with it. He storms into the temple and he's all like... listen up, fuckos. You guys keep worshiping Artemis and
try
I
that again. I don't like fuckos. Try it again.
Listen up, dum-dums.
All right, one more time. Try another one.
Listen up, stupid folks. Listen up, platter heads.
I like that. Keep going. Keep going. Try another one. Try another one. I want more alts.
Listen up, choking dogs.
Nice. Keep going. Two more. Two more.
I can't.
Two more. Two more.
Listen up, glass brains.
Nice. One more. Last one. Last one.
Listen up, slappos.
There we go. We'll use that one.
I hate Artemis. How about we have a little contest? If Artemis is so powerful, why don't you pray to her to kill me? And then if she can't, I'll pray to my god to kill all of y'all, and we'll see which god really has power.
John completely abandoning the ideas of Christianity.
I know, here. And also I like that their reaction is like, no, we know that you can work miracles. Like, we know that you can kill us all. We saw you, like, heal people. Just please don't do this. Like, we don't want to be involved in this. And he's like, no, either you convert or I'm this. Fucking killing you. And so and he's like, I'm like, you just said we were going to have a contest and now it's either convert or die. Like, that wasn't even, you keep changing your plan. He's like, shut up. Dear Jesus, please destroy all idols and show these, what did I call them? Choking dogs. how wrong they are.
Slappos.
Bam. The altar breaks apart into a million pieces. The statues all crumble. Half the temple falls down. The collapse kills the priest. And everyone's like, okay, fine. We believe in your god. Just, like, don't kill us. We didn't want this to happen. And he's like, how do you like that, huh? Like, why didn't Artemis save you if she's so powerful? The quote is, where is the power of the deity? Where are the sacrifices? Where the birthday? Where the festivals? Where the garlands? Where the great enchantment and the poison allied to it.
John's a bully, if you don't mind my saying.
Yeah, and then they're like, okay, we've seen the error of our ways. We believe in God. Sorry about the idol worship or whatever. Just, like, please stop killing us. Great way to get converts. they definitely won't revert back to that as soon as John isn't there to threaten them with death.
Mm-hmm.
So then basically, John is like, okay, I would love to move on to Smyrna. However, I need to stay here and babysit you dum-dums because I know you're going to start worshiping idols the second that I turn my back. So they all go over to Andromius / Andronicus's house, Andy's house. This is the praetor who said John had to do his magic in the nude and mm-hmm. he is now converted to Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And like, there's one person in the crowd who comes over who is a relative to the priest who was killed when the temple collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
And it says that this guy just, like, leaves the body at the front door and doesn't say anything about it and just comes in with everyone else and just, like, leaves the dead body there. Like, all right, I'm just going to come back for this later. Just going to leave it here.
So you think he was just going to go to this meetup while he was on the way home, taking the body of his, it was an appointed thing to bring the body there?
Well, it specifically says he doesn't tell anyone.
I understand that. But, like, do you think it was pointed? I mean, like, or do you think it was just, was it an ultimate act of passive aggression leaving the?
No, I think he was just like, I'm just gonna leave this here. I'll be right back.
Interesting.
I think it's like, when people don't allow shoes in their house,
mm-hmm.
and then there's, you know, there's like a pile of shoes at the door.
Right.
And
you weren't expecting that, so you wore, like, mismatched crappy socks or whatever.
Yeah.
In this case, it was like,
in this case, the rule is, like, no dead bodies, mm-hmm. you know.
And he was like, oh, shit. Yeah. I guess I just leave it here.
Yeah. They're like, I know it's kind of silly. Like, we're so uptight about this. But, like, you know, we just don't like dead bodies in the house. So just leave it in the pile.
And his is the only one, so everybody knows whose it is.
Yeah. Well, and John either psychically knows this or just sees the fucking dead body lying at the front door. And he's like, hell yeah, bruh. Like, you know what's up. You got your priorities straight. You come in here, get saved. Who cares about this fucking dead body? You can worry about that later.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jesus did say, let the dead bury the dead.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a reward for this priest relative's faith, John decides he's going to raise the priest from the dead. So he tells the relative guy, you know, go out there, say, John, the servant of God, saith to thee, arise. The guy goes out and does it. Bam. Comes back in with the priest, walking, talking, scratching his ass.
Mm-hmm.
And John's like, okay, now everyone in here, we all believe in Jesus, right? Not Artemis, Jesus. We got it? Okay, good. Next day, John gets a vision. Tells him to go 3 miles outside the city gate. So he does. This whole crew. But they're not going to Smyrna. They're just going 3 miles outside the city gate. And then I'm not sure if they witness this or if someone just tells them about it or what, but basically there's this young like farm worker out here in the countryside,
mm-hmm.
who
I think they just witness it. I think they just wander by at the right time.
Yeah, I think so too.
Because of God, you know, giving him that vision.
Yeah. So there's this guy, this farm worker, he is like sleeping with another guy's wife.
Yeah.
Or at least trying to.
No, he is.
And his dad tells him to stop, so he kills his dad by kicking him. He kicks him to death. Then he takes out his scythe.
It says, I kicked him and slew him. It's a little ambiguous.
I kicked him and slew him. Yeah, he kicked him to death.
Well, that's gross.
Yeah.
I can't approve of that.
It's like in Drive, Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
In the elevator.
Yeah, or
that's this guy.
Irreversible or something.
Yeah. And but then he gets out his scythe
mm-hmm.
from his girdle and he starts running.
I don't like the way you say that.
Well, that's what it says. It says he gets his scythe out from his girdle. What do you want me to say?
It's not what you say, it's how you say it.
Anyway, John intercepts him and he's like, whoa, 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 where are you going with this scythe? It doesn't look good.
That looks like a murder scythe to me, my dear boy.
And the guy's like, so, just did something real bad. And I did kill my father because he told me not to do adultery. So now I'm just going to go real quick. I'm going to kill the woman. I'm going to kill her husband and myself. And just going to get that done. Bye. And then John's like, okay, that's one way to approach this problem. Another way might be I raise your dad back up from the dead and you stop doing adulteries.
Convert to Christianity. Follow me forever. It'd be good.
Yeah. So they go to the dad's dead body.
I think it'd be a good change for you.
Yeah, this is a new path for you. There's a crowd gathered and the murder son is like, you know, weeping and tearing his hair out on account of having murdered his own father.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like John's prayer here because it's like, dear God, in your infinite wisdom, you knew some fucked up shit was about to go down. And you knew that you would need like some heavy duty cleanup,
mm-hmm.
you know, from someone who you've given miracle privileges to.
Who is, we can all admit, a 7-star God man.
Yeah. So thank you for sending me here to fix this. Boom, bam, boom. Raises the dad from the dead. Dad is like, why did you raise me from the dead? I have no reason to live because my son sucks so bad.
I mean, it's like you have the memory of your son kicking you to death. Be rough. You know, you got serious work to do. Like, just in terms of coming to terms with your own life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And John is like, well, my friend, have you heard the good news about our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ? And he walks the raised up dad back to the city gates.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's 3 miles. And he explains God to him the whole way. And by the time they reach the gates, the dad is converted. Unfortunately, the murder son is still a little freaked out.
The young man, when he beheld the unlooked for raising of his father and the saving of himself, took a sickle and mutilated himself.
Does that mean he cut off his dick?
I think so. I think so.
It just says he mutilates himself. But I got the idea.
Considering the first thing that he does after he mutilates himself is run to the house wherein he had his adulteress
mm-hmm.
and reproaches her.
Yeah, he yells at her for like tempting him.
Yeah. So I assume he mashed up his dick or whatever.
Yeah, for like leading him astray. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jesus did say like if your right hand offends you, like cut your right hand off and cast mm-hmm. it away. So if your dick does it, then just cut your dick off and cast it away.
Gruesome stuff, my dear.
And yeah, so he yells at her for tempting him mm-hmm. into sin, but he doesn't murder suicide everybody.
No.
So this is a step forward.
Mm-hmm.
Then this is really interesting. He goes and finds John. He goes into Ephesus, finds John, tells him what he did. And John's like, actually, the problem isn't your unruly members, which I assume means dick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he's like, yeah, the dick isn't the problem. The problem is your heart, the dick of the mind.
the heart, the dick of the mind.
You have these sinful thoughts and feelings, and that's what you need to get rid of, not your dick.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't seem to have an opinion on whether it was okay to yell at the married woman, but you know, at least she didn't get scythed to death. So
no one needs to get scythed today.
Yeah. So now the murder son also converts and follows John. Then there's this brief interlude, which I guess some manuscripts don't have, and other manuscripts have different versions of it.
Mm-hmm.
So John,
so we both read the one from gnosis.org, right?
Yeah. Well, so I read some in Bart Ehrman's book. But he doesn't have the whole thing in there. So the other ones I did read on gnosis.org.
So there are two versions of this story.
Yeah. So
you read two versions.
Yes.
I just want to make sure we lay out some terms up front.
Yeah.
Because a notable other apocryphum in the past, you know, we read some different
stuff. No, there was nothing happened that was bad. And I was totally prepared. So anyway, here, John is just chilling and either watching or petting a partridge. And, you know, just like a random, it's like basically just like a random pigeon. He's like, just like chilling with this wild bird. And someone comes along and says like, oh, I thought you're supposed to be this great, like teacher, like holy man.
In the first version, it's a preacher, one of his students.
Yeah. He's like, why are you playing with this dumb bird? And so, yeah. So in the first version, John's like, well, maybe you should spend more time playing with birds and less time sinning. And the guy's like, oh, my God, how did he know I was sitting? And he, like, falls to the ground and, like, weeps. And then in another version, John's like, oh, I'm just, like, taking a break. You know, I'm, like, taking my Sabbath and chilling with a bird. And
well,
then
so in the
when
second,
I get back to work, I'll be, like, ready to work.
The first one doesn't make a lot of sense, but the second one.
Well, the first one makes perfect sense. The guy was sinning. He should just be playing with birds instead of sinning.
That's true. It does make sense. In the second one, I feel like you didn't quite explain what was happening.
Oh, okay.
Because in the second one, it's not a preacher or one of his flock that comes up to him. It's a hunter from the woods.
Yes.
Who comes up to this famous holy man and
And he's like, well, do you walk around with your bow always drawn? And
yes.
He's like, no, I only would draw my bow when you'd shoot something because otherwise I would just be wasting all my energy.
Right.
And he's like, yeah, well, that's what I'm doing now. I'm just like chilling. But then I'll draw my bow of Jesus words later.
Let not this little and brief relaxation of my mind offend thee, young man, for unless it doth sometimes ease and relax by some remission the force of its tension, it will grow slack through unbroken rigor and will not be able to obey the power of the spirit.
Wow, he really made that interesting metaphor sound boring as shit.
No, I mean, I like it because he's doing the same thing that you said you specifically
Yeah, no,
liked,
I do.
Which is like, you got to take a break.
You got to take a break. Even God takes a break.
Mm-hmm.
It's just part of the process. You can't work well if you don't take a break sometimes.
It's not, it's got to be part of the
And like
process.
Pet a partridge. Just pet a partridge, why don't you? and then he gets a letter from the church in Smyrna that's like, hey, we're still waiting on you over here. And so it's like implied that he's about to go to Smyrna. But then there's a big gap in the text that is lost to history. And we don't really know what happens. And that's where we're going to stop for today, the first half of the Acts of John. And we'll cover the second half next week.
Next week on Sunday School Dropouts.
Acts of John Part 2.
The Injohnning. Before we do that, should we rate this book?
I think we got to rate this book. How would you rate this book?
I think I'm going to give this one like 5 out of 8 renowned flowers.
How come?
So, I mean, it's a tough rating. Tough rating this mm-hmm. time. Because it's full of some winning, apocryphal absurdity,
mm-hmm.
I'd say. But it's not as frankly, not as wild as some of the stuff we've seen before.
Yeah, there's no like seal tanks or upside down crucifixions yet or anything like that.
There were a couple of nice moments in it, I suppose, like that historical moment or the historical connection I felt when reading a story about someone who had never seen themselves in the mirror.
Yeah.
Which is like, you know, I suppose a thing of privilege because I bet there are people.
Well, yeah, like Amedes has a mirror.
Yeah.
Because he's rich.
Yeah.
John's a fucking fisherman from Jerusalem. He doesn't.
I just mean like.
He's from Galilee.
I was thinking that there are probably people less historically disconnected from me that have like never.
Yeah.
Seen themselves in the mirror. Anyway, that's like an isolated moment of sort of interest, I'd say. Otherwise, the stories are, you know, raising people from the dead, weird stuff happening. There's some Christianity sort of awkwardly shoehorned in.
Yeah.
Which really diminishes, I'd say, the impact of both the Christianity and the miracle stuff.
Yeah.
I had heard that this was derided as a Gnostic text, but it's like not crazy and spacey.
We haven't seen anything super Gnostic yet.
The only thing I can think of that's like sort of semi-Gnostic is the idea of the portrait of John being like an emanation of God.
Yeah.
Or like trying to get somebody familiar with that, the idea of there being another layer.
Yeah.
Of reality beyond what you see.
Yeah.
Or something along those lines. Besides that, not super inspiring. Goofy. Uh-huh. Pleasant.
Yeah.
But not like a home run apocryphum.
What do you think? I was going to give it 5 out of 9 Sons of Thunder.
Mm-hmm.
For much the same reasons. But we do have a second half.
So it could turn it around.
Yeah.
It could turn it all around.
It could turn it all around. What? It could turn it all around.
Is that your Jimmy Stewart?
Yeah.
I guessed right. Even though it's not very good.
Well, it was good enough for you to guess it.
I spent a lot of time with you, my dear.
All right. Let's get into listener mail.
That sounds great.
Our listener Peter wrote in. He was he said he was, quote, directed to your podcast via Grant, though I don't think he'd appreciate you not liking Riverdale. So Grant, a.k.a. Ironicus, was the guest on our Ezekiel episode. He co-hosts two podcasts. Well, co-hosts a lot of things, including the podcasts History Honeys and a Riverdale recap podcast called Sex Archie. I just want to clear up the slander because we love Riverdale. It's the worst show on TV, and we watch it every week. And I actually wrote a whole essay about Riverdale that ran on Racked, and Grant linked to it in his podcast. So please do not slander me. I love the terrible teen drama Riverdale that's awful, and I love it.
I feel like we have different ideas about what love is.
Well, we're married, so.
In some sense. I mean, if you love me and you also love Riverdale.
You have a problem.
the term might be too broad to apply in this particular case.
Peter also sent us a great Billy Connolly bit about the crucifixion, which I recommend to anyone if you can understand a very thick Scottish accent. Moving on.
Mm-hmm. Our listener Becky wrote in with a comment about an ancient Greek play, Thais, that the Skateboard Scorpion Boys Bible said was a good, clean comedy. If you remember that, it was in a little call-out that said Paul quoted from the play.
From, like, Menander.
Menander, yeah. But there was also evidence that he had seen other plays of the same time.
He had seen plays?
That's right. So that was, and then it specifically said, well, anything that Paul watched was probably good, clean, fun.
Yeah.
And like clean comedy that respected everyone and was good for boys.
And skateboards.
But Becky says, this play, Thais, is actually about a courtesan who convinced Alexander the Great to burn down Persepolis because she had a grudge against King Xerxes. She says, I knew Paul wasn't seeing the family-friendly comedy that the boys' Bible suggested. Of course he wasn't.
Of course not.
At least even in his life as Saul, he would have seen whatever.
Yeah.
Because who cares?
Yeah.
You know?
Our listener Jeffrey wrote in with another long, beautiful email. He sent us one before that we sadly don't have time to read on air, but it was very kind and thoughtful. We appreciated it very much. And he also owns a pet care service. So he sent us a picture of like 20 dogs, and he was like, you know, you don't have to bless them. You know, it's kind of cheating, but we're fucking blessing them. So dogs to bless here are Keely, Marco, Tazzy, Poppy, Luna, Tilly, Zara,
Rosie, Marley, Ginger, Buck, Finn, Giada, and Penny.
And my blessing is, rise up therefore and give glory to God for the work that has come to pass at this moment.
The work that is come to pass is a photo of a bunch of dogs at the same time.
The greatest moment in history.
Look at all those dogs. What are all those dogs doing
there? A photo of a bunch of dogs.
How did they all get in that same place?
They're cute. I love them.
That will do it for Sunday School Dropouts tonight.
Woohoo!
You can follow us on Twitter at @SunSchoolDrop.
And find us on Facebook at the same URL, or just search for Sunday School Dropouts. Look for that dang old logo of a piece of smoking a cigarette created by Elise Carlton. Thank you very much. And thank you to Nico for your sound engineering, editing, and music contributions to our podcast.
You're welcome. If you want to send mail to the show, you have some pets to bless or whatever, you can do so by emailing us at contact@sundayschooldropouts.lol.
That's contact@sundayschooldropouts.lol. Do not type sundayschooldropouts.com. It will go into a terrible place.
It's a bad place for, frankly, losers. If you want to follow Lauren on Twitter, you can do so at Lauren E. O'Neill, O'Neill like Shaquille spells it.
The E stands for Egbert. No, it doesn't. You can follow Nico on Twitter at NikoBakulich. That's his name. It's Nico Bakulich. You can also go to NicoBakulich.com. There's music there. There's all kinds of things there. It's awesome.
If you want to be a real nice person and a great fellow or lady, you can leave us a review on iTunes. It helps other people find the show, oddly enough, and frankly, immortalizes your love for this strange thing that
true.
We do.
True.
We'll be back next week with more Sandy School Dropouts. You can't possibly...
Sandy School Dropouts.
Mm-hmm. You can't possibly guess what our episode next week is going to be about. But if you do, you win a prize.
The prize is smugness.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Lauren.
I'm Nico.
And we'll see you on Sunday.
Bye.